is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 231, operating on April 29th, 2024. This is Drew, an airline ops manager and aspiring Cessna 172 pilot. I'm here with my buddy Doug, an airline pilot. We're here to discuss aviation topics from an industry insider's perspective. For the contributors, like Doug and I will have like a minute or two of small talk before our small talk on the episode, but I was telling Doug, let's just start now because he's like giddy with, I don't know if he's sleep deprived. He's smiling and laughing.
So,
but I think he's on some kind of, I don't know, when you're a little delirious, like when you've been so stressed out and so sleep deprived, there's that moment when you're a little delirious, right?
I'm very sleep deprived. I have like a caffeine drip going into my arm right now. And I left the East Coast so early this morning that when I got to Denver for my short layover, it was still breakfast at the club.
Oh my God.
I had two breakfasts today, even though I've been up for like 12 hours. That's all I've had is the eggs and sausage at the club twice.
That is awesome. So that fits in for a start. It's like, we're going to talk about business travel. Doug, business travel is strong, at least from what we've heard from the likes of Eddie B and Curbs.
Curbs. I like that.
You like Curbs? Because we have Eddie B, which like is kind of, Eddie B is Ed Bastian, the CEO of Delta, and Curbs, who is Scott Kirby of United. And we've also heard this from Robert Isom. I haven't thought of a catchy name for Robert Isom. So
Bobby I.
Bobby I. There you go. We'll start with that.
You've got Eddie B, Curbs, and Bobby I. And Biffle, Barry Biffle.
Oh, well, Barry Biffle, it's easy. You don't need to come up with anything. Just his name is funny.
Just call him by his full name.
Yeah, Barry Biffle. And I was talking to Kevin at corporate about Karsten Spohr. You don't need to do anything with that. I mean, that's as German as you can be. Speaking of business travel, they're talking about how business travel is strong. We are also seeing this personally, as you were just on a business trip. And when this episode airs, I'll be in Chicago for a business meeting. Doug, how were your flights? And was the trip productive? Or could you have just phoned or zoomed it in?
I'll talk about the flights and the reason that I was on this business trip here in a second. But I can tell you, the airports were nuts today. Absolutely nuts. Well, actually, going back to Wednesday, I showed up at Sacramento. Anyone who's been to Sacramento or most airports with big parking garages and off-site parking, they have those signs, the electronic signs that tell you how much they are, whether they're full or not. The Sacramento parking garage on a Wednesday, a random Wednesday in April after spring break travel, was closed because it was full. The parking garage was full. I parked at the normal surface lot that I park at, which is usually pretty wide open. Drew, I parked almost at the back, and today when I got back, it was full. No one else was coming in because it was full. Raleigh this morning going through security was absolutely nuts. I have clear plus pre-check.
Right.
It still took me about 20 minutes to get through the line. The normal line, the non-pre-check line, was out the door of the terminal. Once I got through security, it was like wall-to-wall people. This is on at 5 o'clock in the morning on a random Friday in Raleigh. Denver was the exact same way. I had landed in Denver. All of the clubs, or most of the clubs, were full. Our clubs were almost at capacity. I walked past the Capital One lounge.
In Denver.
They had the sign out saying no capacity. The line was like 50 people long.
For the Capital One lounge?
For the Capital One lounge.
Oh my God. That sounds like an American
Denver.
Express line.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. April 26th. Spring break travel is done. Easter was weeks ago.
It's not a holiday
Kids
weekend.
Are still in school. Like the travel day today was absolutely nuts, and I don't know why. Yeah. And I was about to text you, but I fell asleep on the plane, so I didn't. But I was going to say, this is a preview for summer. Summer is going to be crazy. It's a good problem to have for us as people who work in the industry. But if you haven't booked your tickets yet for summer travel, people, do it now. And I can tell you, we're supposed to have a vacation in Breckenridge in June. After what I saw today, I'm considering just buying tickets for our family. I may not even wing it and do the non-rev thing. I might just bite the bullet, buy the tickets now so that stress is gone.
Right. Well, while there's still some good deals. You left this morning. I like what the agent used. The crew was arriving late for whatever reason, and she said, we'll be boarding shortly because of we're taking care of some housekeeping items.
Housekeeping items. I texted you and our buddy Mike at corporate. I said, wow, this is a new delay code. I guess I'm doing it in air quotes that I've never heard that, yeah, we're going to be delayed in boarding because of housekeeping on the airplane. And I texted you guys. I was like, housekeeping? I've never heard of that. So, of course, we came up with all these cockamamie ideas.
It just sounds so wholesome.
And then I saw the crew show up, and I was like, oh, it was just because the crew was late showing up. You could have just said, we're waiting on the crew. You didn't have to say it. Anyways, neither here nor there. How were my flights?
Yeah.
Getting to Raleigh was kind of a nightmare scenario. I showed up, parked. I'm walking into the terminal, get a notification on my app saying that my flight is delayed. And it meant that I was going to miss my connection. So I was like, okay, you know what? Let me just get in, get through security. I'll go to the club, get a drink, get some food, and then figure out what I'm going to do. I was supposed to fly Sacramento, Chicago to Raleigh, getting in at like 9 p.m. I had my Air Force sims the following day, not until noon. So it wasn't a big deal that I was getting in late, originally at 9 p.m. I get to the club and I'm looking at options and I found one that could possibly work, but the app wouldn't let me do it. So actually I had to call the customer service number and see if they could put me on it. Long story short, I ended up going Sacramento, San Francisco on a 175, ERJ 175. Then I did San Francisco to your station, Dulles. This was awesome. I upgraded my double 737s to a 787-9 Transcon. Drew, I was in 53D, an aisle seat in the middle three, four or five rows from the back. It was a fantastic experience.
Right?
I can't even begin to tell you.
I'm telling you.
How much better the wide body experience is over the narrow body. And we've talked multiple times about the size of the windows. Even though I was sitting four seats away from the window,
yeah,
I could just look over and see what's going on the entire time. It was awesome.
Well,
it was,
I'll tell you.
53D, it was a great flight.
Well, I took that same flight coming back from Hong Kong. So I could have flown a 737, but if I wait an hour, I flew that 787-8. And I got a middle seat, but I was completely happy. I had a nice view outside because the windows are so big.
Yeah.
I had nine seats across, but the seat did not feel uncomfortable at all. I had plenty of leg room.
Not at all.
And
the service was great. The flight attendants were very attentive. They came around a lot. It was a great experience. But I didn't get into Raleigh until like 4 hours later than I was originally supposed to. I think I texted you at like 1:30 in the morning saying I finally got to my hotel in Raleigh. And then I had double sims yesterday for my Air Force sims, KC-46, because our sim here at the base that I'm at isn't up and running yet. We're still doing this once every quarter. We have to go to a place that have room for us. Luckily, they put us in one-day sims, but what that meant was it was two pushed right together. So you go into the sim and you're doing engine out work, emergencies, malfunctions, all of this, plus normal stuff. I sent you a picture. We were just talking about pattern work, and we still use a whiteboard.
I know, you sent
me
that.
We still talk about speeds and the miles and nautical miles and feet per nautical mile that you're losing. I sent you a picture of it, and I was
that's great.
You're going through your flight training right now. I'm sitting here flying an airplane that I've been qualified on for almost a year, heavy, and we're still talking about pattern work on a whiteboard. Those discussions bring me back to like the basics of flying and the love of flying, and having those talks is just awesome.
Oh yeah. One of these days we should talk about the pattern. I'll talk about the 172 pattern.
I think we have. Haven't we done that already?
We have, but I'd like to do it side by side with the 767 pattern.
Okay.
And discuss the speeds, like the speeds for each leg of the pattern and the turns. I think it'd be interesting.
Enough about my stuff. You said I was smiling and laughing. I cannot wait to hear about your flying today.
Oh my
you
God,
finally so... got to get up in the air after, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah,
something
it seems
like that.
Yeah, it seems like that long because every single time there's some low clouds, rain, snow, not snow. I mean, with my luck, it could be snow right now.
TFRs.
No, yeah, even today, the winds were going to gust to 16 knots, which is a little bit high to do pattern work. So Joe was like, hey, how do you feel about today? And I was like, well, we could do ground school, but let me drive up there and we'll see how it is. It was not bad at all. So I would say the winds were gusting at 4 knots, they said it was gusting to 16, but we didn't really feel it. There were a few bumps. Beautiful sunny day on the Chesapeake. So this is, if you want to see where I fly, it's Martin State Airport. So we're doing pattern work. Doug, I finally got the landing. I still can improve. I mean, you know, when you get that, the best way to describe it is when you finally get parallel parking where you don't have to, right?
Yes. Right? Yes. That is a great example.
Where you don't have to overthink it and you can judge.
No. And you're not worried about it. Yeah, you pull into a spot and you're like, oh, it's parallel parking. I can do this, no issue. That is a great example.
Yeah, so if you've listened to the last episodes, like I've been really upset. You know, Joe's like, you know, calm down. We haven't flown for a while. It's okay. You'll get it. You know, it's never been a horrible landing, but it's always been a little bumpy.
Sorry to interrupt, Marissa. I'm going to throw her under the bus. It's fine. Mm-hmm. She never listens to these podcasts. She still hasn't gotten parallel parking. She's in her mid-30s. So what you're telling me is she'll never be able to land an airplane.
Well, if you really want to do it, and you know, this is a thing, right? All of us are regular people. If you really want to do it, you'll figure it out. If Marissa really wanted to be a great parallel parker, she would, but she's going to be the person who has the automatic park the next car you buy, or you have, probably have it now. Yeah.
We do already, yes. So but anyway, that ship has sailed. I digress.
No, it's okay. Just if you can imagine, so I'm coming down to land, you see the numbers keep getting bigger, that's what you're aiming for, and then as you cross the threshold, you pull the throttle, so it's you completely basically shut the engine off, right? It's on idle, and you're coming down, and it starts coming down pretty quickly, and then you have to judge when you pull up. We don't flare in these small planes. You just kind of level off and let it settle onto the ground. And I just wasn't getting it. And I remember Joe was saying once we got close to the ground, he would be like, hold it, hold it, hold it. And for the longest time, I thought he meant the control column, like hold it in the same position. No, he was talking about holding that line of sight.
That attitude.
Hold that attitude, exactly. So I got that the last time we flew, and now it's just minor corrections. And Doug, I got it. So he hardly talked the whole time. And I really was enjoying getting to know this Cessna 172. One thing that I got to be better at is keeping the... Now, I said it was windy. So now the nose is pointing to the right, but I'm not going to the right. So I'm kind of crabbing a little bit. Before I touch down, I have to straighten. Got to straighten the nose because I was landing...
Crosswind controls.
Right. And after the... when we were talking afterwards, he was like, great job today. I hardly failed some of the landings, but your feet need to always be busy during the approach and landing. So that's what I'm taking back today. My feet need to be busy. And what that means is I'm controlling the rudder and making that correction as right before touchdown so that my nose is straight and I land on both wheels at the same time.
It's one of those things where there are so many things in life that I can think back on where one day I just didn't get it. And then it was like I woke up and didn't do anything different. But the next day, I got it. And it made sense. And all of a sudden, I'm doing it. I understand the euphoria that you're feeling right now. Where it's like you went from trying, to now all of a sudden succeeding. And it is such a great feeling. This is part of that process of it's going to motivate you to do more and be better and just go out. And now, and Drew, now that you understand how to do the landings... Now you can actually really focus on that crosswind control, swinging the nose around, centerline control, all of that. Now that you know how to land, that's one less thing you have to worry about. It'll start to come naturally. So you can start to put all of these other pieces together.
In a way, I'm glad it was a windy day because if there's no wind, I wouldn't get that experience. I wouldn't know that that's a factor.
We actually joke about it when we listen to the ATIS or we pull it up on the iPad or get it on ACARS. If it's calling for calm winds, most of the pilots in the cockpit are like, uh-oh.
What is that?
Oh, boy. Because like all these places we go, like Osaka, it's on the water. San Francisco, it's on the... It's always windy.
Right.
Except for that one time when it's calling 000 at 00. There is no wind. It's calm. There is no wind at all. And because we're so used to doing the crosswind controls and crazy sporty landings, that when there's nothing, it's almost like, I'm more nervous because if I screw it up, there is no excuse for why I screwed up a calm wind landing.
Yeah.
As opposed to if I prang one on in really bad winds, I can always just blame the winds. But when it's calm, there's no excuse at all.
Well, there's another good thing about winds. So when there's winds, you're constantly correcting, right? You're constantly on the controls. So you were, I had to use the word manhandling, but you are manhandling this plane to keep it straight and level or on a, you know, on the glide slope. That's good because when it's so smooth, you're like, okay, am I supposed to be doing something here? Because, you know, it's like smooth as glass. You're just wondering, am I supposed to, do I just not touch it? Or
what do I do with my hands? I feel like I'm supposed to be doing something.
Yeah, so it's not bad when it's windy. Just real quick, next, I'm so excited. So next week, we're going to do a cross country. We're going to land at another airport. It's called Easton, Maryland.
$100 hamburgers. There it is. You're finally getting into the, or as we called it on an episode many, many years ago, Fattenbacks. You're starting your Fattenbacks.
I'll have to see the restaurant. Easton is a foodie town in Maryland, but I got to focus on flying.
The most awkward thing is, like, if it's a bad flight out there, you land, and then you're with your instructor eating a hamburger, like a really good hamburger, or maybe not really good, but either way, and you're debriefing your really bad flight, and you're like, oh, I'm trying to eat my hamburger right now. We're talking about how bad I was on my flight. And, oh, by the way, we have to do the flight back still. Hopefully it's not like that, though.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm really excited to land another airport. One more thing regarding this flight lesson. Good news and bad news. He has an interview with a regional carrier next week. Mm. But there's no class dates yet, so I'm hoping if he does get hired, it'll be a while before he's in a class.
A few months still.
It was a little ground school, like 15 minutes. We just reviewed the flight. And then we spent another half an hour talking about his interview, and I was giving him some direction, some guidance on the format we use at the company, the STAR format. I think other companies use that too. Anyway, if you're having a job interview someplace, just send us a message. I'll tell you what that is.
You did the exact same thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they were super impressed when I interviewed. They're like, oh, wow. Yeah, that's great.
Well, he was impressed. He was like, wait. It's like, oh, that really makes sense. It's like, yes. So, Joe, whatever response you have, make sure to couch it in that way so it's a nice, reasonable response. But anyway, so that was about half an hour at least of talking. Can I charge him? Is that billable at all?
you're the consultant at right? this point.
Because I'm getting his flight lessons from him to pay more money to the school so I can rent planes. But my lesson with him is going to actually make money. Shouldn't I be the one who's going to? Anyway.
I think so. Yeah. We have to move on. We've gone super long in this, which is great because I really wanted to hear about this. You had a VIP visitor and you went back to your old, old stomping grounds, but your current stomping grounds of the Udvar. Is it Hazy or Hazy?
It's Hazy.
Hazy.
Don't get it wrong because Aaron has clocked me three times on that. Lara got the VIP package, which she was received with a escort vehicle to whisk her off the property. Patrick and Ryan, they work on the move team, so they were very excited that Laura was coming. I worked in the morning.
Laura from Non-Rev Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
Met up
I'm
with
talking
her
like,
quite a bit.
Oh, my goodness. Laura is a aviation media celebrity. Yeah, she's one of the three with Tyler and Monique from the Non-Rev Lounge podcast. So listen to them. They're our close friends.
And she was on a layover?
No, she was visiting her daughter is studying in Richmond. She got the airport tour. We took her to Amphora. We haven't gone there yet. It's a diner, airport diner, but that's where we go. And then we went to Jimmy's, of course, and then we shut down Jimmy's at 1:35 in the morning. So again, like when you visited, it's almost a 24-hour day for me. But I paced myself this time. It was a lot of fun. Laura, thanks for visiting. Come anytime. Next week, we have we lovingly refer to him as Next Trip Podcast Public Enemy Number One, Aaron from LA, who listens to every episode and makes sure to tell us how he's constantly evaluating the episode so we can remember to not make mistakes.
He sent me a couple messages this week. I've just ghosted him. I saw them come in about some corrections that he had for me. Aaron, I'm sorry. I'll get back to you when I actually have a brain bite of time.
Well,
I can respond.
He said in the last episode, you had that turbulence. You had that weather system when you were flying from Chicago to Denver, and you had to skirt the system. And we talked about you flying over Oklahoma, and you actually didn't because he pulled up the flight radar, and you were about 50 miles, like very close to it.
Aaron, we were filed through Oklahoma, and we took a very quick shortcut. But guess what? I could look out my window and see Tulsa. So to me, I'm in
counts.
Oklahoma. Like, yes. Maybe. Guess what?
You're in their airspace.
I don't see state lines from the air, Aaron. I'm sorry. All right. Anyways, we've gone long. Let's move on.
We mentioned Patrick and Ryan from the Move team at DC where I work. He is in the Gen Z age group. Did you know that this generation is starting to be called the Tool Belt Generation? Have you heard that?
You sent me that article. I think it was from NPR. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal this yes. week about that as well.
Same thing.
I think that that's starting to gain some traction. And all these media outlets are really starting to pick up on this.
Why the Tool Belt Generation? So this is because the last 10 to 15 years, over the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen young people turn to trade schools versus four-year universities.
Yeah, and as you sent me this NPR report, and we just talked about it, Wall Street Journal picked up on it as well, that a Washington think tank called New America did a survey of Gen Zers who said they believe that if they acquire the skills, it's possible to get a well-paying job with only a high school diploma. The cost of a college degree, which has doubled in the 21st century, is also turning some young people away from going to college.
And just for reference, Gen Zers, I believe they're in their low 20s, because I believe the millennials are the late 20s.
I'm a millennial, and I'm in my mid to late 30s.
Yeah,
so I don't quite know where the... I know millennials started in like 83 and then ended like 2001. So I think Gen Z then is like 2001, 2002, and okay. on. Which would be like, yeah, low 20s right now.
So low 20s, right. Mm-hmm. So he's a Gen Zer. Doug, a bipartisan infrastructure bill along with a growing economy have led to a high demand for electricians, HVAC technicians, solar panel installers, wind turbine installers, etc. that very often make six-figure incomes, Doug. And I will tell you, they are so in demand. Robbie and I have a few rental properties, and I usually have to wait a few days to get an electrician or a plumber. It's a very high in demand job.
This yard project that we're doing, we had to wait 2 weeks for our electrician to show up, and we still haven't done the plumbing yet, or the water hookup. These trade skills, and most of my neighbors are around us, most of the neighbors, they're GCs, general contractors, or handymen of some sort. Yeah, it definitely, like, and they're actually of my generation or older.
Yeah,
and then there, I feel like there was this dip in the millennials where not a lot of millennials went into that work. Mm-hmm. And now, as these articles are saying, the Gen Zers are really picking it up, which is good because, like, that is what we need as a country. Like, that is the foundation, the fabric that makes the country what it really is. Let's go back to Patrick. He's interested in becoming an aircraft mechanic. He started getting a college degree and then decided that it wasn't for him. He now has to decide to take 19 months off of work and then pay $20,000 to $60,000 to get his A&P license, which is an option. But wait, there are better options. What we should say, A&P is aircraft mechanic. He and I talked about this at Jimmy's that one night. And I was just asking him, hey, what are you hoping to do? He was explaining this to me, and I said, well, does the company offer any sort of, not compensation, but like, will they help pay for that? He said, yes, but it's very hard to get into the program where the company pays for it. So he's just trying to figure out other options. This is just like the pilot shortage recently.
Yes.
Airlines are also desperate for more mechanics, which is exactly what we were talking about.
He's trying to get an A&P license, which stands for Airframe and Power Plant. I knew what that meant, but I had to look it up. I keep forgetting. Airlines are desperate for more mechanics. There's good news on that front for our tool belt generation, Gen Zers and Millennials and Gen Xers, you and me. If we want to become mechanics, here are some programs that have or are starting up. Hawaiian Airlines was early in the game, so they started this in like 2016, Doug. It's their Aircraft Mechanic Apprenticeship Program, AMAP, about 8 years ago, in partnership with the Honolulu Community College. Maintenance instructors work with students, sharing in-depth knowledge and offering hands-on learning to prepare them for the FAA Airframe and Power Plant, AMP, maintenance certification. Apprentices take the Honolulu Community College courses during the day, and they hold a part-time shift at Hawaiian's aircraft maintenance hangar, where they get paid as mechanics performing repair and preventative maintenance.
That is a great way to do it, where you're getting your A&P, your actual like certificate, you're getting, as you call it, certificated, but then you're also doing your apprenticeship on the side, and you're getting that hands-on experience. That's fantastic. We talk offline quite a bit about how mechanics are in short supply. Aviation mechanics are in short supply. This is a great way to get that problem fixed. United started a similar program last year. This past March, the airline announced its new Calibrate apprenticeship program. The goal is to grow its pool of aircraft maintenance technicians, ground service equipment maintenance technicians, and facility maintenance technicians. United initially planned to hire over 15,000 employees, including 7,000 maintenance techs by 2026. The Calibrate Apprenticeship allows students to get paid while they complete the program.
There is a similar program at Delta. I don't know if there's one in American. There probably is.
I'm sure there is.
This is way more meaningful than getting an A&P license and then going to find an airline to work for, because they are working for these companies as they learn. Yep. That training.
They're already part of the team. They know the culture. They're on the inside, and that they're getting paid, or they're getting the companies who need that expertise are helping them get to that level.
Right.
Because the companies realize we need these people with their A&Ps. We need these people with this technical knowledge and base expertise. We want to get them across the finish line, as opposed to them having to leave us, go get their A&P,
another company.
And then they might go to a different airline. Mm-hmm. This really encourages people to stay with the same company. We see this across a lot of different industries, especially post-COVID, where a lot of different industries are encouraging people who are fast movers to take that next step. We will help pay for whatever it is that you want to do next that will help move the company forward. This is a great way to do it. Great way to keep people, because I think we did a story maybe 2-3 years ago about how people are just jumping jobs more than they ever have been. Data shows the last like 15 years, it used to be people would stay with a company for their entire career. People now are jumping all over the place. It's good for the people who are doing it because they're finding those greener pastures, if you will, or the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. But if the company can keep that talent and help move that talent forward, I think that that's even better than this jumping all around. Oh, and we also talk about benefits as part of what we do. When you're constantly jumping between airlines, you're losing your benefits. You're starting seniority at day one again. Mm-hmm.
There's all these programs for pilots, Aviate with United, Propel, I think with Delta. Those are employees that are in the pipeline. This is even better. These are employees that are already on the payroll. They're already part of Hawaiian and United, and they're learning the procedures. And just like you said, maybe these companies are learning from the millennials, because the millennials will change jobs in a heartbeat. You look at them the wrong way, you know, they're going
to
change.
Hey, I take offense to that. I'm a millennial. Yeah.
No, you are an exception. Now. Like, I feel like you choose a career and you stick with it. Not so much for a lot of millennials, but maybe Gen Zers or this tool belt generation, they're more about loyalty and learning a trade and staying with the company. But the companies have to also return that loyalty. Maybe this is how it's working. It's hard to keep an employee, at least in this case, Delta, Hawaiian, and United are creating these programs to train them, pay them well, offer good benefits, and keep them at their companies.
It's great.
It's a good thing. All right, the last part is federal government can always help. Federal government is also giving aviation trade schools a boost. The FAA is granting 32 schools across the U.S. $13.5 million for training future pilots and technicians. Pete, dust off your wallet. $13.5
million. Yeah, $13.5 million. What we're talking about right now is really not all that much.
It should be billions, because the country needs aircraft mechanics and electricians and HVAC, you name it. This is something that's going to directly help the company create high-paying jobs. And guess what people do with that high pay? They pay taxes. So, I mean, we're gonna get it back. Just, you know, put that investment in. Shout out to Greg at CVG Airport in Northern Kentucky. They use the funds to grow their aviation training programs and summer camps to reach more people interested in an aviation maintenance career. That's awesome.
This is all great. We have to stay on this track. As I said, we are short on maintainers. That is a glaring
We don't
gap.
Call them maintainers.
Sorry. maintenance technicians?
Yes. Maintainer?
Okay. That's an Air Force holdover. Yeah, I know. But they call themselves maintainers. But yeah. Anyways,
no, it just sounds
weird. Neither here nor there. No matter what they are called, we are short on those individuals. So any program, whether it be government-funded or the airline, this is awesome. This is a great way. We talked about the pilot shortage. We talked about your office. We talked about customer service. They're all short. There are a lot of jobs that and I'm not ragging on one job or another. There are quite a few jobs in the industry that's pretty easy, plug and play. You just plop someone in. You give them a 2-week, 3-week course. Right. And all of a sudden, they can have a supervisor with them and off they go. You can't do that with mechanics. You cannot do that with maintenance. You have to have
skilled labor
and years of apprenticeship and knowing how to do all the tire change. And I showed up the airplane, I don't even remember where I was recently. They were out there putting more pressure in the strut. You can't just take someone off the street and be like, all right, let's go pump up the strut of a 777. No, right. It takes months, years, decades to get to that level of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to cultivate that now. And that is what we're really doing with these programs.
Yeah, that, you know, this, you're talking about skilled employees, right? This is something that is so important that people don't think about it. I think in our culture, it's all about college degrees, master's degrees, PhD, but not everyone wants to do that. Someone who's a plumber right now, if I have a neighbor who's a plumber, they're probably making more than the PhD that lives in my neighborhood, I guarantee. And it just, I always remember what my grandfather told me. It's like, you could lose everything that you have, but no one can take away your education. So just think about how valuable that is to have a skill like that. But anyway, it's really good news.
Drew, transitioning to our news this week, we talk about pilot training a lot on this podcast, so it's good to delve into other programs that are getting the next generation of aviation workers prepared. After that feel-good story, let's get the bad news story out of the way first. Thanks for giving that to me while I'm sleep-deprived.
Sorry.
And burning the candle at both ends, I guess you could say. While airlines are looking to hire more people, Southwest will actually be starting to lay off people, unfortunately. Southwest blamed Boeing delivery delays, it seems like we're talking about that every week, for lowering its capacity increase plans. They now expect to receive only 20 737s this year versus 79. The airline said this week, actually, that it's going to stop service to four airports: Bellingham, Washington, which is north of Seattle, Cozumel, Mexico, Syracuse, New York, and Houston Bush Intercontinental, which they launched during COVID. That was a huge, what do we say, the blog say, splashy or...
Oh, right. Yeah, it was
swanky announcement. It was like, hey, we're going to... We've been at Houston all these years, Houston Hobby all these years, we're going to Bush. Now they're gone. They're leaving.
Well, getting off the phone with Neil so that we could do this podcast, I got to go. And he was telling me that his neighbor, who's not an airline employee, they just found out that their trip to Cozumel is canceled because they had tickets on Southwest to go to Cozumel. And it was, of course, they're going to buy tickets on someone else. But it was funny. He was telling me about that, and we're talking about it right now.
Southwest expects to end 2024 with around 2,000 fewer workers compared to last year. And they plan to slower hiring and offer voluntary time off programs, like we've talked about with many airlines. Mm-hmm. They did not confirm the layoffs would happen. Some of this could be seasonal employment where they just don't keep people beyond the end of the season. So it's not really a layoff. It's just we're not going to keep you on. Because I haven't read anything about furloughs, which means people that are on contracts or on the books beyond that. But either way, their headcount, and that's really what matters. Their total headcount, which is total number of employees, is going to be 2,000 people below where they were at the same point last year.
And Doug, half of that, maybe more, might just be attrition, where people are retiring
and finding other jobs. Which, I mean, that's what Spirit is hoping for, too, because the major carriers keep hiring people away from Spirit, and Spirit has come out and said, we will furlough people unless our attrition rates are such that we don't have to, that it just is natural. And like, in good times or normal times, airlines don't like attrition. They don't like people leaving for other companies. Airlines like Spirit, now Southwest, might look at this and say, it's really not as bad of an issue because we have to reduce that headcount to begin with. So if we lose them to someone else, then we don't have to lay anyone off. That's the ideal scenario. The people who want to stay at Southwest or Spirit or whatever company, they can stay because other people move on. Maybe that's what it'll come to at Southwest. Southwest this week reported a loss of $231 million in the first 4 months of 2024, which is substantially more than the $159 million that it lost in the same quarter last year.
You know, the default is to blame Boeing. We should hashtag that, hashtag blame Boeing, like blame COVID. Some of this is because they probably can't fill these seats to Houston, Bush, Cozumel, or Syracuse. You know, as simple as that. And it may not have to do directly with Boeing not delivering them planes. All right, let's stay with first quarter results, Doug, and look at American's performance and see what Bobby I says.
Bobby I.
Bobby Iyer. Yeah, Bobby Isom. Yeah. American posted a loss of $312 million compared with a profit of $10 million last year. Adjusted for one-time items, including costs associated with new labor contracts, American lost $226 million. Shares of American were in rally mode Thursday after the carrier reported a wider-than-expected first-quarter loss, but... it's a big but provided an upbeat profit outlook for the current quarter as revenue rose to record levels. So they're saying their second quarter or the current quarter is looking really good.
I think we talk about this every year around this time that the first, and you mentioned it last week or 2 weeks ago, that airlines generally lose money or don't make that much in the first quarter. And that's part of the reason why when Wall Street looks at it, they yawn and you don't get these big losses, like sell-offs of the stock. A quarter is just a snapshot in time. As long as the company makes money through the year, a quarterly result is literally just looking at 3 months, a snapshot of that time. If they beat expectations or they're right around expectations, Wall Street doesn't really care. They look at it, they're like, sure, you lost money, but what's coming forward? Second quarter and third quarter, it's expected to be blowout for most of the airlines. I just mentioned, I spent 5 minutes talking about how crazy the airports were today on a random Friday in April. That's just a precursor of what's coming. We've talked about business travel is really starting to come back. All this premium travel that people are just dusting off their wallets still 3 years, 4 years later, after we talked about the COVID exit.
Right.
People are still dusting off their wallets. They're still paying for it. Okay, American lost $312 million. They're going to be fine.
They did report record revenue. It was $12.6 billion in the first quarter, which for them is record revenue for the quarter.
Which means that they have money coming in. They just they have a cost issue. Now, I can tell you, fuel prices are going up. They usually do during the summer. I don't even want to say what gas is a gallon here where I live. It's embarrassing.
Is it $6? Because
it was cheaper in Maui last week than it is here. And when I was in North Carolina, of course, I was on my business card, but North Carolina was $2 cheaper a gallon than what I'm paying here right now.
You have a Tesla and a Corolla. You're fine. You don't have a
SAS Watch mobile lounge. We tankered fuel from Hawaii to California. I won't talk.
That's crazy.
I won't talk about that. But I mean that like that. That's how expensive it is here. I'm the one who chose to live here. Yes, I know people are rolling their eyes. Anyways, but what I'm saying is, yes, costs are rising. I don't want to bring up the recession thing, all of that. But if you look at the revenues really is, yes, you have to get your costs in order. You can't just spend willy-nilly and get into a huge loss-making deficit machine. But if the revenues are coming in, that is what shows the demand. And the revenues are still high and getting higher. Higher than historic, like higher than ever before at most airlines. The airlines, they're not slowing down. Yes, costs are rising, but the revenues are rising too. American, Delta, United, Alaska, all these airlines who reported close to positive numbers in the first quarter, most of them were losses.
Yeah,
we're going to be in 3 months when we have this same episode where we talk about results. We're going to be singing a totally different tune. It's going to be record-breaking or close to it. All these airlines in the second, third quarter, we're going to be talking records. So I'm not worried about it at all. Yes, there's a cost problem.
Well, so with the cost problem, it's easy. Robert Crandall can advise Bobby Iyer to just take one olive off each first-class salad and save like $41 million off the bat. I don't know if you guys listened to it. You'd have to go back 3 years, but we talked about how shrewd Bob Crandall of American was. And if he had to save money, he'd tell you to bring it down to three olives on the salad versus four. I mean, this actually happened. He was so shrewd. So maybe Bobby Iyer could get some ways of reducing costs from Bob Crandall.
All right, let's end our news topics in a positive story. It's good news for Indian aviation. We talk all the time on the show about Indian aviation. India's largest airline, IndiGo, which was just an Airbus narrow-body operator, now all of a sudden said that they're going to order up to 100 Airbus A350s. The commitments are for 30 confirmed orders and purchase rights for 70 more, with delivery starting in 2027. Reuters reported that the number of international air travelers in India is expected to grow to 160 million by 2030, up from 64 million in 2019. But the bulk of the traffic still goes to foreign carriers such as Emirates. IndiGo flies 60% of domestic air travelers within India. IndiGo aims to feed traffic to the A350s that will then fly nonstop to North America, Europe, Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. We talked about the Vistara Air India merger and how they're going to become the big carrier for India. Watch out. But guess what? There's room. There's 1.4 billion people in India. India is increasing their GDP. They're increasing their per capita income. They're increasing the number of passengers who travel. It is a country that if our country of, what, just shy of 400 million people can support three major global carriers, India can support probably 10.
Probably.
And they only have one right now. This is just the beginning of what we're going to talk about this for the next decade, yeah. I guarantee.
So IndiGo is a shade of blue, right? IndiGo reminds me of JetBlue in the U.S., but IndiGo is much stronger comparatively. Like if you look at domestic airlines in India and domestic airlines in the U.S., IndiGo is a much stronger domestic carrier. It's India's largest domestic carrier. Now imagine that domestic carrier going international with 100 A350s. People in the executive offices at Air India are shaking in their boots right now because IndiGo is apparently talking to Indian people when the times that I'm there, they really like it. It's good quality. It's reliable. This is going to make Air India better too because they'll have some tough competition. We talk about the center of gravity of aviation moving east from the Middle East to India and China. We are actually seeing this as we tape this podcast over a number of years, what we talked about when we started the podcast. So it is really nice.
Well, and it's really surprising that they are going to be able to start taking deliveries in just 3 years.
Pretty fast.
We talk about how order books are booked out way in advance. Mm-hmm. The fact that they can start taking deliveries in just 3 years, that's going to be huge for IndiGo.
Yeah, pretty good. Well, you know, it's bad news for Boeing. The 787 was tipped off as their probable choice. I can't remember the name of the CEO, but he said this gives them, the A350 gives them more opportunities. And here we go. What do we talk about? 787 range. Boeing needs a high capacity, long-range airplane, or they're going to continue losing these orders to Airbus.
Okay, Drew, routings and weather are unpredictable, but so are airline tickets and fees. The Department of Transportation announced that they're going to begin establishing rules for airlines to provide automatic refunds for cancellations and long delays. Here's what they announced. The DOT will define a long delay as more than 3 hours for domestic flights, more than 6 hours for international flights. The new rule states passengers will be, quote, entitled to a refund if their flight is canceled or significantly changed and they do not accept alternative transportation or travel credits offered, unquote. This sounds a little bit like, I don't remember the rule in Europe, the actual name.
Is the passenger bill of rights?
Yes, but there's like some letters and numbers associated with it where you just like automatically get money. And that we don't do that right now in the U.S. Mm-mm. the way that Europe does. The DOT will also require airlines to give cash refunds if your bags are lost and not delivered within 12 hours.
This is problematic. I mean, we'll have to see what the details are. But if a flight is delayed for 3 hours due to air traffic control or delays at customs, things that are directly controlled by our federal government, how are you going to fine the airline for that? How are you going to blame the airline for that? It'll be interesting to see.
Spirit and Frontier this week came out and said, we feel like the DOT is trying to basically shut our business down. Mm-hmm. And Spirit especially is angry because they're struggling right now. They were trying to merge with JetBlue to save themselves. Right. And now there's this. And when you have $39, $29, $19 fares, and you're not making a lot of money.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you have this. That could have huge ramifications. Now, I will say, I understand why the DOT is doing this. They're trying to protect the passengers because through COVID, so many complaints about everything, all these meltdowns airlines have had. Pete Buttigieg is trying to step up and say, we're going to take care of the passengers. But you also have to look at the business.
Right. You don't want the businesses to fail.
It's a fine line of taking care of both the passengers and the business. Yeah. And I think that it might be slowly starting to shift in the direction of not sustainability, like not sustaining the actual business model.
Right.
And going in the full opposite direction.
Well, the DOT not allowing that merger, and now this may cause Spirit Airlines to go away. How is that helping the traveling public now that they have one less choice? That's going to lead to a rise in airfare. Speaking of Spirit and Frontier, the ones with a lot of fees, low fares, but then a lot of ancillary fees. These new rules aim to eliminate hidden fees for changes, baggage, and taxes. I think this is good, Doug, because when your airline ticket is $65 and your check, your carry-on bag fee is $65, which I paid at Frontier, that's not right, you know, because no one expects their gate check bag fee to be the same as their ticket. The rule on extra fees, what the Biden administration refers to as surprise junk fees in air travel, will require airlines and online travel booking sites to disclose upfront the fees for a checked bag, carry-on bag, reservation change, and reservation cancellation. I do like that because you go on Kayak, it says $65. There's all these hidden fees.
It's not that they're taking away these ancillary fees because airlines make a lot of money on the ancillaries. What they're doing is they're just being more transparent about it, saying, okay, if you're buying a $65 ticket, that's not going to be the walkaway price.
Right.
In a way, the same thing happened to me. I kind of expected it, but like when I went to the Cubs game in Chicago a couple weeks ago, I paid like $90 for the ticket with a couple beers, some nachos, and a hot dog at the game. All told, it was like $200 for the day.
Yeah, that's
right. I mean, yes, I didn't have to get the second beer, third beer, whatever it was. I didn't have to get the hot dog. But still, you pay the price to get your foot in the door, and then you pay a heck of a lot more.
Yeah.
For the experience, for everything. Yes, I went in knowing that, but I also went in not knowing what the prices on the inside would be. I didn't know. I hadn't been there in 20 years, and no stadiums are the same. I didn't know what the cost of a beer and a hot dog was going to be. It would have been nice to know ahead of time, so that way I could kind of mentally go in and be like, okay, all my per diem for the entire trip is gone on this 1 3-hour baseball game that I'm at.
You're talking about a pretzel and a beer, right? Here we're talking about a seat. This leads
to understand. No, it doesn't quite equate. It's not quite the same thing.
Right.
But what I'm saying is the cost of getting in the door, which is what I did. I paid for my ticket, the game ticket, to get in the door. And then, I didn't have to pay for anything on the inside. But when you're inside for 5 hours, you kind of have to eat. You have to drink something. And you can choose what you're going to do. Because they don't let you bring any food in. They don't let you do any of this. All I'm saying is, this is the unbundling of everything. Now, you never could buy a ticket to a game and get guaranteed you get X number of drinks and food and whatever. But what I'm saying is, like, that's kind of where we're at right now in society is you pay, you get in the door, and then you still pay more.
Well,
it would be nice to have that number to kind of know, hey, what's the actual, like, walkout price? Like, when I leave at the end of the day, when I get to my destination or when the game is over.
Don't get them started. Now they'll require the stadiums to say, what is your average price to come in, have a drink, and a pretzel? That might be required. That might be a law. I don't know if we want to go that far, but again, you're talking about a pretzel and a beer. This leads to the next item. The DOT is saying customers must also be informed that they don't have to pay for a seat assignment to travel. Now, I'm an AV geek. I know about these things, and I won't pay for it because I know I'm going to get a seat. But when you buy a ticket on some of these carriers, it immediately takes you to a seat map where every desirable seat has a price. So you've already bought your ticket. Now the unassuming customer, which is most civilians that don't understand, are going to pay $10 when they didn't have to pay. They could have gotten a seat at check-in on the day of. So they're saying this has to be clearly stated. This train is already rolling, apparently. Most of the changes will go into place in about 6 months. I don't know how this gets stopped unless the airlines file some lawsuit.
Injunction.
Yeah. But otherwise it's going to happen, so the airlines will have to figure out how they work around this. Pete Buttigieg said, "This is a big day for America's flying public," at a news conference at Reagan Airport. One positive note, we want these low-fare carriers to offer some of the niceties that the larger carriers do. And some of them are, we talked about Frontier having premium seats. And we also talked about Spirit flying to, you know, not to Vegas on Wednesday, you know, from Kansas City to Vegas at 6 a.m. They're actually going to be flying from Sacramento to Baltimore, for example, from Seattle to Detroit. These are trunk routes that they're going to compete. Charge a little bit more and don't charge people, don't nickel and dime people. This is what it's all about, you know, the hidden nickel and diming. And in some cases, it's $65. I'm still bitter from that, as you can tell.
I don't remember if we've talked about this, but I know that some of the hotel apps, for a while, you would see the price of the hotel room, you would book it, or you would get to, like, the payment screen, and then you pay an extra $50 in taxes or whatever. Hotels a year or two ago went to, you can toggle it on or off, but you can say, show the full price with the taxes.
Yes.
And that came from something kind of like this. Marriott, Hilton both do that. Came from something kind of like this where people pushed back and they were like, just show us the full price. We don't really care how it's broken down. We really honestly don't care what is the room rate, what is the tax rate, what is the resort rate at some of these places.
Yeah.
We just care what the walkout price is per night. Per room. We don't care how it's, but well, yes, we do care how it's broken up, but we also want to see the actual like price as we are searching for these. So I think where this is going is basically if I want to book a ticket from, I don't know, pick city A to city B to price shop and compare, yes, it would be nice to see the walkaway price with the ticket, the taxes, and then whatever add-ons you might possibly have. They could start out by saying, this price includes one check bag, one carry-on, which you pay for. And then if you want to actually lower the price, you can kick those out and say, okay, well, I don't need a check bag. I'll keep my carry-on. I don't need a pre-assigned seat.
Right.
And that way, the worst case scenario is the first price you see. And then you can start, oh, you know what? I can get rid of this. I can get rid of that. In a way, it's kind of like, again, I go back to what I was doing with my yard, where they quoted us some massive amount of money, and Marissa and I were like, well, we don't really need this, we don't really need that, we don't really need this, and we chipped it off, and all of a sudden, the price is lower. I would much rather have...
You're saying start off with the price...
Start off with like, okay, here is what everything would be included, and here's the price. And if you want to lower it, you can. You don't have to do a check bag.
Right.
So we can take that price off. You don't have to do a carry-on. We can take that price off. You don't have to do a pre-assigned seat. We can take that price off.
Yeah.
And that way, you start out with $400 and you walk it back to $250. Mentally, that's a win. I started with $400 and now I'm down to $250 and I can work within these confines.
Right.
Whereas the way it is now, it's like, oh, $65, and then you end up paying $250, and you're just mad and frustrated, and you show up at the airport, and you're still mad and still frustrated because you're like, oh, I got swindled.
No, I like that. So you're saying have the full price of, so what should be included? The ticket, one check bag, one carry-on, and a seat assignment. I think that's reasonable. Correct. That's what people expect.
Yeah. And then if you're like, well, I don't need a pre-assigned seat, kick that to the curb. Okay, now my price goes down. Okay, I'm not going to be checking a bag. It's just a quick trip. I've got my carry-on. Totally fine. Okay, I don't need the check bag. Your price goes down again.
I like it. Yeah, that makes sense. I think they go with that, and I think that's reasonable.
Well, Drew, you won't have to worry about baggage fees or seat fees this week because you're traveling on business. What's your itinerary?
Wouldn't that be horrible? Like if the company started charging us if we wanted a pre-assigned seat? Thank you, company, for not charging me for a seat assignment on a business trip. I'm going to Chicago for our summer. I call it a festival because it's so much fun and the network is so good. Networking is so good. And we meet all these people that we see every year. We're going to be talking about our strategy for the summer season on how we deal with weather and heavy loads. And in DC, we deal with everything to the maximum. I have drawn up some procedures that we'll use for my airport. Present it to the rest of the hubs. And
is this the same one you went to last year or 2 years ago where they told you don't show up with anything?
Oh, yeah.
And then you showed up and you didn't have anything? They're like, why don't you have anything?
No, I'm not falling for that. I have a 5-slide PowerPoint in my pocket ready to go.
Okay.
Yeah. To catch people up, I was going to a winter ops thing and they said, I asked, so do you want us to prepare anything? And the NOC director was like, oh no, just come have an open mind, have a good time. As I'm in line at the security checkpoint, I didn't even bring my laptop. I will never forget my laptop again. I just had my cell phone and my boss says, hey, they want a couple slides on what our plans are. Would you mind throwing that together? And when your boss asks you for that, you're not going to say no. Yeah. I literally was putting that together, combination of my phone. Thank you, Samsung, for having a Microsoft Word and PowerPoint on the phone. And then I finished it at the business center at the hotel. So I'll take my laptop and I have a 5-slide presentation ready to go. Okay, but more important than that, I'm flying a 737-700 to Chicago, which I love the -700, and I'm flying a 757-200 back. I can't believe I'm more excited about that than flying a 787.
Two sports cars, especially on those short of routes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it should be great weather. I am so fortunate. Yeah, we call it Next Trip Network, and both of us know a lot of people as friends outside. You know, that we've met through the podcast. You met my buddy Mike at a Cubs game. Just randomly, Laura was here last week in Chicago. Eric, who was on the show, who was a travel agent, now works for a major carrier. He's going to non-rev to Chicago, and then we'll hang out.
Nice.
We'll hang out that first night, and then this week, Aaron, Public Enemy number one, will be visiting. He has work and family in DC, so I'll be hanging out with him next week. That's our network keeps growing. You've been so busy, I have not had time to ask you what you're doing this week. Do you have any flying this week? Or since you just arrived back in Smuff or SAC, have you hit the ground running with the honey-do list? It sounds like you have.
I have, yeah. We actually just got kicked off because Marissa called asking where I am. So I need to finish this up. We've got a dance competition this weekend. I may have told you this. I may not. I don't even remember. My next company trip is Monday.
To where?
Amsterdam. Ooh. First time. I am so excited about it. I have never been, aside from just flying through the airport, I've never been into the city. I have never flown the airplane there. I go to Amsterdam on Monday. I cannot wait.
You're going to Amsterdam. So we just talked about how this summer is going to be busier than last summer. I don't believe we've started SFO Amsterdam this early. So the fact that you're going to Amsterdam already is not even.
Yeah, I think previously it was a summer seasonal, but I think it was like June. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's now April, I'm doing it in April, that really shows how much demand there already is going to be. I haven't looked at the loads yet, so I don't know what it's going to be like in the back, but I'm beyond excited for this.
We went long. We apologize because I'm just so pumped up from my flight, and Doug is just talking so much because he's delirious. He's going to, as soon as this podcast is done, he's going to hit a wall. And he's got coffee. To our friends and contributors, this podcast is your show, so go on our website, nextstripnetwork.com, and let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Instagram at nexttrippodcast or on Threads. Please tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
You can also call our Google Voice number. Dear, I think we should just start calling it the hotline. No one needs to know it's Google Voice. Just say, call the hotline. Call our hotline to ask a question or just rant about something. The number is 872-529-5620 when calling from the U.S. Make sure to use the country code 001 or +1 when calling from abroad. Thanks to all of our friends and contributors for your support and for joining the conversation. Drew, enjoy your trip next week. Say hi to Eric. Say hi to Aaron.
Yep.
Have a blast. I know you talked about the network. It really is awesome, everything that we've created. Have fun with all those people. To everyone else, we'll see you next week. In the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.